It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Former coal miner Robert Bailey has black lung disease, and he's waiting for a lung transplant.
Transplant, don't really want. I'm hoping for greater things. I'm hoping for a healing, but I leave that in the hands of God, you know, whichever direction I have to go.
His story coming up on this West Virginia morning. The State Board of Education is currently in control of five county school systems in the state. That means, in most cases, the appointed State Board is making all of the county's decisions in lieu of the locally elected county school board. At their monthly meeting yesterday, State Board members made some major decisions impacting the future of three elementary schools in a county under their control. Consolidation. But it's not the combining of the schools that has local officials concerned. Instead, it's the cost of the land the county superintendent wants to buy. Ashton Mara has the details.
The way a county handles the actual maintenance of existing structures and the building of new schools is one of the major areas the state considers before taking over a county school system. In June of 2011, the state decided Gilmer County wasn't doing a good job handling not just their facilities, but also personnel, finances, and curriculum, among others. The board declared a state of emergency in Gilmer County and voted to intervene. Since then, the county has been progressing, including taking part in the first inter-county school in the state. Facilities have been a major focus, and it was in that area the state board voted to move a new project forward.
The basic transaction that's being proposed is the conveyance from the seller to Gilmer County Schools of a tract of land.
Heather Hutchins, counsel for the State Department of Education, describes the agreement the board is to consider. Gilmer County is looking to consolidate three elementary schools into a more centrally located, brand new Cedar Creek Elementary. Current Superintendent Ron Blankenship and a planning committee visited 15 sites in the county and chose an 82.5-acre tract of land at a cost of more than $446,000. At about $5,400 an acre, some members of Gilmer County's Board of Education weren't happy with the choice and shared those concerns with the state board, including William Simmons.
When land is appraised for $1,400 per acre, and we're offering $5,400 for hillside land, that raises a lot of questions.
Aside from the fact that the county is paying nearly four times more than what the land is worth, and that most of the land is on a hillside, Simmons and Gilmer County Board Member-elect Norma Hurley shared concerns over the lack of information shared with the county board and the public about the decision.
Now the Mountaineers of Gilmer County don't feel as though they are free. We live under a dictatorship. Our people are told nothing. I'm sorry, I mean no disrespect. I don't think anyone here intended that, but that has been the result.
Gilmer Superintendent Blankenship, however, defended the decision before the state board, saying this land was truly the best option. Of the 15 sites visited, this site was the most centrally located to help limit the amount of time children will spend on the bus. Another site located nearby, Blankenship said, would have also been a good option, but would have cost an additional $1 million to connect it to water and electric systems. In the end, the board unanimously approved the proposal and the site. Blankenship expects the school to be completed for the 2016 school year. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
A retired West Virginia coal miner has a doctor's appointment this morning that almost didn't happen. It could be the beginning of his road to recovery with a lung transplant after battling black lung disease for years. Jessica Lilly brings us the story.
You think that you would have enough evidence to help you with what needs that you have. But apparently, the way the system is, it doesn't always work that way.
Robert Bailey was a coal miner for 36 years. He began in McDowell County, and after it became too hard to breathe, he retired from a mine owned by Patriot Coal in Boone County.
Mostly because my health, my breathing, my black lung condition. Got where I felt like I couldn't perform the way that I felt like I needed to, even though at the time It was one of the best jobs that I had in my mining career.
Bailey is carrying a bag with an oxygen tank on his back. Medical tubes wind from the tank around his ears and over his slender cheeks, carrying oxygen through a periodic puff to his nose.
I got it on pulse. That way it only comes out when I inhale. Because if I put it on full time with this portable tank, it wouldn't last very long, and I would have to, it wouldn't be enough to keep me until I get back to my other tanks.
Oh, okay.
So it makes the tank last longer.
In 2009, Bailey first filed for disability and black lung benefits. After a few years of evaluations and paperwork, the United States Department of Labor determined that he deserved a monthly payment and medical care, which is a feat in itself. All the while, Bailey was struggling just to breathe.
A person don't really understand. I've seen my uncles die of black lung, seen them suffer. But I never knew what they were going through until I've had a few episodes myself, and it's not very pleasant. It's almost like drowning. You might breathe as hard as you can breathe, but you can't feel the air. You're not getting any quality, no use out of it, even though you are breathing. It just don't help you. And you feel your whole system shutting down, and like you're about to melt to the floor.
An investigation into the misconceptions of black lung and maze of benefits by the Center for Public Integrity revealed a system in which coal miners were fighting an unfair battle for benefits. CPI found that the industry's go-to law firms had been withholding evidence that proved miners qualified for benefits because they had the debilitating disease, pneumoconiosis, or black lung. It also found that certain doctors rarely and sometimes never diagnosed patients to have the disease.
But still, it's a struggle just to receive the help that you still need. I'm in the process of a lung transplant, but black lung insurance is protesting any further treatment toward this case.
Bailey says he had tests done to rule out cancer, similar to Gary Fox's case, which was at the center of the CPI investigation. Like Fox, doctors determined that Bailey needs a lung transplant. Doctors confirm Bailey is in a race against the clock.
I asked them, after my evaluation was done, how long I would have to wait before I got on a donor's list or... And they told me that as soon as my testing was done, that they would put me on the list. So that tells me that they don't think that my lungs have very much life left in them. But now I'm in a waiting game of waiting on the insurance to verify their approval for me to receive this treatment.
Unfortunately, former miner Gary Fox died while waiting on a transplant. Doctors made an appointment at a hospital in Virginia about Bailey's lung transplant. The original date was May 27th, but in a letter dated April 23rd, Patriot Coal's insurance company, Underwriters Safety and Claims, informed Bailey the company was not approving the next appointment. The insurance company said it wanted to see more medical records. The letter gave no timeline indicating when they would make the decision, except to say later.
They want to review my records even after I have been awarded Social Security on pneumoconiosis and been awarded black lung by a federal judge. They still want to review my medical records to prove that black lung is the reason for my need of a transplant. And before they approve this, they refuse any further treatment toward a lung transplant.
When the time came for Bailey to make the trip to Virginia, he still didn't have answers. So we called Underwriters to see what needed to be evaluated, since Bailey was already approved for black lung benefits and was receiving them. Bailey's medical records from Bluefield Regional Medical Center indicated two mostly black biopsies and findings of severe complicated pneumoconiosis or black lung. But the company would not comment, even with Mr. Bailey's permission. So we reached out to Patriot Coal. Shortly after we sent that email inquiring about black lung benefits, we heard from Bailey as he traveled to his appointment. He said the insurance just approved coverage of the visit. Then, in an email, Janine Orff, Vice President of Investor Relations with Patriot Coal, said, "As with all health care benefits, procedures are in place for medical professionals to review individual cases and determine appropriate treatment. Patriot continues to provide approved black lung benefits in accordance with our commitments. Patriot cannot comment on individual medical cases."
Well, my oldest grandchild is 20. My youngest one is 2 years old, so it would give me hope of seeing them getting their lives more intact. And life is great. So.
Through it all, Bailey says he's not angry. He's put the situation in God's hands and depends on his faith to guide him.
Transplant, don't really want. I'm hoping for greater things. I'm hoping for a healing, but I leave that in the hands of God, you know, whichever direction I have to go, whether it's through healing or transplant or whatever.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Athens.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:41. Rain and thunderstorms with heavy rain possible in our forecast today, tonight, and into tomorrow. A flash flood watch is in effect for most of the state through this evening. Daytime highs will be in the 70s and 80s, overnight lows in the 50s and 60s. We can look forward to a mostly sunny weekend.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by thousands of West Virginia artists at Tamarack, the best of West Virginia in Beckley, where everything is Mountain State made. Facebook.com/TamarackWV. Support is also provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
This week on West Virginia Morning, we've been exploring the initiatives of a startup nonprofit in Wheeling. If this is the first story you're hearing about Grow Ohio Valley, let me fill you in. A small group of young people is spearheading several projects in Wheeling. They hope to build a sustainable local food economy. The region has depended largely on the coal and steel industries, which are declining, and the population is decreasing along with the economy. Like main streets across much of the state, Wheeling is home to a lot of abandoned, depressed, impoverished areas susceptible to crime and drug epidemics. The group has just been awarded a couple hundred thousand dollars to help make their dream of a healthier community a reality. Glennis Board reports.
A lot of the impetus for the growth of the local foods movement in Wheeling in recent years has come from this guy, Danny Swan, co-founder and director of operations at Grow Ohio Valley, or Grow OV.
So we're on the corner of 14th and Wood Street in East Wheeling, and we're sitting looking at the future East Wheeling Community Greenhouse. So there's some nice landscaping going on here, a nice entryway into this corner lot, which is a vacant lot.
Grow OV has been awarded $22,000 from the Hess Foundation and other donors to pursue this project. It gets at the heart of what Grow OV is all about, because it's a year-round growing facility building on historic remnants in the heart of a neighborhood that is in need of some love. The building will be used by residents as a place to grow food to be sold throughout town.
This has been an amazing project because literally everybody has been involved. The guys who hang out here on the corner, you know, college professors, people from the church down the street, kids, grandmas. The way that this project is bringing the community together is the coolest thing about it. And then all the other stuff with the sustainable building design and growing food year-round, that's pretty amazing too. But all kind of serving this higher purpose of uplifting the community.
Danny Swan is like a Pied Piper. I want you to put this in there because I think it's important.
That's Bill Hogan, longtime Wheeling resident. In fact, his family has been in Wheeling for generations.
What he's done, this whole thing has changed is changing the culture of East Wheeling.
Hogan remembers the days in Wheeling when the population was more like 100,000 instead of the 28,000 that it is today. He remembers when the town was full of apple and pear and cherry trees.
People underplay or undervalue, I believe, people's connection with the ground, with the soil. And he's awakened that in this population. And it's really taken hold. He's got all these gardens in one of the worst sections of town, and none of them have ever been vandalized, which, you know, it speaks volumes.
Hogan has been credited by Grow Ohio Valley's executive director, Ken Peralta, as playing a pivotal role in getting the nonprofit off the ground.
Ken Peralta moved into the area, and he's a brain and he's a concept player. And the reason he came here is because he's concerned about the global population and the food production isn't going to meet it. He looked at the United States, and the Ohio Valley is one of the most fertile and could be one of the most productive areas in the country for food.
So everything from cultivating multiple community gardens to deploying MOMS, or mobile markets, which are these roving farm stands complete with cold storage options that travel through neighborhoods, selling to everyone from low-income houses to high-rise buildings that house elderly residents. Grow OV is working it. And they have a 7-year plan that ends in sustainability. One of the key projects to help get them there will be hard to miss for drivers whipping by on I-70 North through the Wheeling Tunnels. Grow OV has plans to plant an orchard on the hillside there in the spring. Again, Danny Swan.
So we're thinking about 1,000 apple trees, and they would be dwarf and semi-dwarf trees. So small trees that you don't have to climb a ladder to pick because it's on a hillside and because we want to have kids involved. Imagine 1,000 apple trees planted on the contour with another 500 blueberry plants and several hundred blackberry and raspberry plants all growing on trellises all over the hill. So it'll have that sort of vineyard look to it, and it's going to be pretty cool. Yeah.
Grow OV applied for and was awarded a grant through the West Virginia Department of Agriculture to get the orchard started. The urban orchard proposal was awarded the highest possible amount of $25,000. Executive Director Ken Peralta said the idea of an urban orchard on otherwise unusable fields with a strong educational emphasis and a creative land use partnership with the Wheeling Housing Authority, who owns the land, well, it all made for a winning proposal. And interestingly, the area in North Wheeling where the orchard is planned, it used to be a vineyard. A German priest grew grapes here around the turn of the century to make altar wine. Today, it's too expensive to try to build on the vacant slopes. So fruit is being reintroduced to the Ohio Valley.
The northern panhandle of West Virginia used to be known for its apple production. You know, the Golden Grimes apple got its start in Wellsburg, and Johnny Appleseed was here. And the fact that you literally can't find an apple here in the northern panhandle to buy that's being grown here. So we want to bring it back. And what we're proposing to do here, what we're going to do, is to build a commercial-scale urban apple orchard with the purpose of putting people to work, teaching kids how to grow food, and to try to get these fruits into local school systems and on local dinner tables.
I think the most exciting part is to see it starting to take shape.
Ken Peralta, executive director.
You know, if there's a 50-acre exercise and food park that's 5 minutes walk from downtown with a organic farm training center on one side and a vegetable processing and storage facility at the top of the mountain and 5 acres of fruit orchards on the other side and steps that traverse the whole hill, the whole city can really be regenerated by a focus on food and fertility and the ecosystem. So I guess knowing what the end game and then seeing people get involved, you know, especially the kids, in the end, that's where the big changes will come from, is changing their mindsets.
He says the immediate goals are increasing production, increasing sales, and creating a full docket of educational programs for kids through adults. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
And for more about the Grow Ohio Valley Initiative, go to our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.